Hi, this is Mrs. English. Today, I'll be reading from Homer's Iliad, the Richmond Lattimore translation of Homer's Iliad. And I'm reading from Book 23. When we left off in Book 22, Andromache had learned of Hector's death, and we read her lament, and we found out that she was even burning the clothing, his special clothing, so that because she knew he would never be buried, he would be killed. Book 23. So they were mourning through the city. Meanwhile, the Achaeans, after they had made their way back to their ships and the Hellespont, scattered the rest of them, each man to his own ship, except Achilles would not allow the Myrmidons to be scattered, but called out to his companions, whose delight was in battle, "Myrmidons, you of the fast horses, my steadfast companions, we must not yet slip free of the chariots, our single-foot horses, but with these very horses and chariots, we must drive close up to Patroclus and mourn him, since such is the privilege of the perished. Then, line 10, when we have taken full satisfaction from the sorrowful dirge, a funeral dirge, we shall set our horses free, and all of us eat here." He spoke, and all of them assembled, moaned, and Achilles led them. Three times, mourning, they drove their horses with flowing manes about the body, and among them Thetis stirred the passion for weeping. The sands were wet, and the armor of men was wet with their tears. Such was their longing after Patroclus, who drove men to thoughts of terror. Peleus' son led the thronging chant of their lamentation, and laid his man-slaughtering hands over the chest of his dear friend. "Goodbye, Patroclus. I hail you even in the house of the death god. All that I promised you in time past I am accomplishing, that I would drag Hector here and give him to the dogs to feed on raw, and before your burning pyre to behead 12 glorious children of the Trojans for my anger over your slaying." So what is this? What are these? Some of the last words that Achilles will speak to the corpse of Patroclus starting in line 19, that he's going to hail into the house of the death god, and what he promised, he is accomplishing. He promised he would drag Hector there and give him to the dogs, and he's dragged Hector there, and he promised to build a burning funeral pyre for Patroclus and to behead 12 glorious children of the Trojans. Remember, he captured those 12 Trojan young men. He spoke and thought of shameful treatment for glorious Hector. He laid him on his face in the dust by the bear of Menoetius' son, by Patroclus. Meanwhile, the others took off, each man his glittering brazen armor, and all unyoked their proud neighing horses, and sat down in their thousands beside the ship of swift-footed Achilles, who set the funeral feast in abundance before them. And many shining oxen were slaughtered with the stroke, verse line 30, with the stroke of the iron, and many sheep and bleating goats and numerous swine with shining teeth, and the fat abundant upon them were singed and stretched out across the flame of Hephaestus. The blood ran and was caught in cups all around the dead man. But now the kings of the Achaeans brought the swift-footed lord, the son of Peleus, to great Agamemnon, hardly persuading him, since his heart was still angered for his companion. When these had made their way to the shelter of Agamemnon, straightway they gave orders to the heralds, the clear crying, to set a great cauldron over the fire, if so they might persuade the son of Peleus to wash away the filth of the bloodstains. But he denied them stubbornly and swore an oath on it. "No, before Zeus, who is greatest of gods and the highest, there is no right in letting water come near my head, until I have laid Patroclus on the burning pyre and heaped the mound over him and cut my hair for him. Since there will come no second sorrow like this to my heart again while I am still one of the living. Then let us now give way to the gloomy feast, and with the dawn cause your people to rise, O Lord of men, Agamemnon, and bring in timber and lay it by with all that is fitting, line 50, for the dead man to have when he goes down under the gloom and the darkness." So we find that Achilles is refusing even to bathe until he has finished Patroclus' funeral rites. Line 51. so that with the more speed the unwearying fire may burn him away from our eyes, and the people turn back to that which they must do. So he spoke, and they listened well to him and obeyed him, and in speed and haste they got the dinner ready, and each man feasted, nor was any man's hunger denied a fair portion. But when they had put aside their desire for eating and drinking, they went away to sleep, each man into his own shelter. But along the beach of the thunderous sea, the son of Peleus, Achilles, lay down, groaning heavily, among the Myrmidon numbers in a clear place where the waves washed over the beach. And at that time sleep caught him, and was drifted sweetly about him, washing the sorrows out of his mind, for his shining limbs were grown weary indeed from running in chase of Hector toward windy Ilion. And there appeared to him the ghost of unhappy Patroclus, all in his likeness for stature, and the lovely eyes and voice, and wore such clothing as Patroclus had worn on his body. So Achilles kind of drifts off to sleep here, and Patroclus appears to him. The ghost came, and stood over his head, and spoke a word to him. You sleep, Achilles. You have forgotten me. But you were not careless of me when I lived, but only in death. Bury me as quickly as may be. Let me pass through the gates of Hades. The souls, the images of dead men, hold me at a distance, and will not let me cross the river and mingle among them. But I wander as I am by Hades' house of the wide gates. Line 75. And I call upon you in sorrow. Give me your hand. No longer shall I come back from death. Once you give me my right of burning, no longer shall you and I alive sit apart from our other beloved companions and make our plans, since the bitter destiny that was given me when I was born has opened its jaws to take me. Line 80. And you, Achilles, like the gods, have your own destiny, to be killed under the wall of the prospering Trojans. There is one more thing I will say and ask of you, if you will obey me. And remember, this is the ghost. Do not have my bones laid apart from yours, Achilles, but with them, just as we grew up together in your house, when Menoetius, this is Patroclus's father, brought me there from Opus when I was little, and into your house, by reason of a baneful manslaying, on that day when I killed the son of Amphidamas. I was a child only, nor intended it, but was angered over a dice game. There the rider Peleus took me into his own house, and brought me up carefully, and named me to be your henchman. Therefore, let one single vessel, the golden two-handled urn the lady your mother gave you, hold both our ashes. Then in answer to him spoke swift-footed Achilles, How is it, O hallowed head of my brother? You've come back to me here, and tell me all these several things. Yet surely I am accomplishing all, and I shall do as you tell me. But stand closer to me, and let us, if only for a little, embrace, and take full satisfaction from the dirge of sorrow. So he spoke, and with his own arms reached for him, but could not take him. But the spirit went underground like vapor with a thin cry, and Achilles started awake, staring, and drove his hands together and spoke, and his words were sorrowful. Oh, wonder! Even in the house of Hades there is left something, a soul and an image, but there is no real heart of life in it. For all night long the phantom of unhappy Patroclus stood over me in lamentation and mourning, and the likeness to him was wonderful, and it told me each thing I should do. So he spoke, and stirred in all of them the passion of mourning, and dawn of the rose fingers showed on them as still they mourned about the forlorn body. Now powerful Agamemnon, line 110, gave order for men and mules to assemble from all the shelters, and bring in timber, and a great man led them in motion, Meriones, the henchman of courtly Idomeneus. These then went out, and in their hands carried axes to cut wood and ropes firmly woven, and their mules went on ahead of them. They went many ways, uphill, downhill, side hill, and slantwise, but when they came to the spurs of Ida with all her wellsprings, they set to hewing with the thin edge of bronze, and leaning their weight to the strokes on powerful, leafed oak trees that toppled with huge crashing. Line 120. Then the Achaeans, splitting the timbers, fastened them to the mules, and these with their feet tore up the ground as they pulled through the dense undergrowth to the flat land. All the woodcutters carried logs themselves. Such was the order of Meriones, the henchman of courtly Idomeneus. These, then, threw down their burdens in order along the beach, where Achilles had chosen a place for a huge grave mound for himself and Patroclus. Then, when on all sides they had thrown down abundance of timber, they sat down where they were assembled. And now Achilles gave order at once to the Myrmidons, whose delight was in battle, to belt themselves in bronze, and each man to yoke his horses to the chariot. And they rose up and got into their armor, and stepped up, charioteer and sideman, into the chariots with the horsemen in front, and behind them came on a cloud of foot soldiers by thousands, and in the midst his companions carried Patroclus. Line 135. They covered all the corpse under the locks of their hair, which they cut off and dropped on him, and behind them brilliant Achilles held the head, sorrowing, for this was his true friend he escorted toward Hades. When these had come to the place Achilles had spoken of to them, they laid him down and quickly piled up abundant timber. Line 140. And now brilliant swift-footed Achilles remembered one more thing. He stood apart from the pyre and cut off a lock of fair hair which he had grown long to give to the river Spurcheus, and gazing in deep distress out over the wine-blue water, he spoke forth, "Spurcheus, it was in vain that Peleus my father vowed to you that there, when I had won home to the beloved land of my fathers, I would cut my hair for you and make you a grand and holy sacrifice of 50 rams, consecrate to the waters of your springs. Where is your holy ground and your smoking altar?" So the old man vowed, but you did not accomplish his purpose. Now, since I do not return to the beloved land of my fathers, I would give my hair into the keeping of the hero Patroclus. He spoke, and laid his hair in the hands of his beloved companion, and stirred in all of them the passion of mourning. And now the light of the sun would have set on their lamentation, had not Achilles soon stood by Agamemnon and spoken, "Son of Atreus, beyond others the people of the Achaeans will obey your words. There can be enough even in mourning. Now cause them to scatter from the fire, and bid them make ready their dinner, and we, who are most nearly concerned with the dead man, shall do this work. Except only let the leaders stay near us." Then the lord of men, Agamemnon, when he had heard this, at once caused the people to disperse among the balanced ship. But the close mourners stayed by the place and piled up the timber, and built a pyre 100 feet long this way and that way. And on the peak of the pyre they laid the body, sorrowful at heart, and in front of it skinned, and set in order numbers of fat sheep, and shambling horn-curved cattle, and from all great-hearted Achilles took the fat and wrapped the corpse in it from head to foot, and piled up the skinned bodies about it. Then he set beside him 2-handled jars of oil and honey, leaning them against the bier, and of course the bier is a funeral bier, what is going to light on fire, and drove 4 horses with strong necks swiftly aloft the pyre with loud lamentation. And there were 9 dogs of the table that had belonged to the lord Patroclus. Of these he cut the throats of 2, and set them on the pyre, and so also killed 12 noble sons of the great-hearted Trojans, line 175, with the stroke of bronze, and evil were the thoughts in his heart against them, and let loose the iron fury of the fire to feed on them. These are the 12 young men, the 12 young Trojans, that Achilles promised he would behead back in book 18, line 336. He captured them in book 21, lines 26 to 33. And now, here in book 23, line 175, he offers them and kills them. Then he groaned and called by name on his beloved companion. "Goodbye, Patroclus. I hail you even in the house of the death god. For all that I promised you in time past, I am accomplishing. Here are 12 noble sons of the great-hearted Trojans, whom the fire feeds on, all as it feeds on you. But I will not give Hector, Priam's son, to the fire, but to the dogs to feast on." So he spoke his threat. But the dogs did not deal with Hector, for Aphrodite, daughter of Zeus, drove the dogs back from him by day and night, and anointed him with rosy, immortal oil, so Achilles, when he dragged him about, might not tear him. And Phoebus Apollo brought down a darkening mist about him from the sky to the plain, and covered with it all the space that was taken by the dead man, to keep the force of the sun from coming first, and wither his body away by limbs and sinew. Line 191. And so here we have a concerted effort. Aphrodite won't let the dogs get to the body of Hector, and Apollo will not let the sun get to Hector's body so that it will not rot. But the pyre of dead Patroclus would not light. Then swift-footed, brilliant Achilles thought of one more thing that he must do. He stood apart from the pyre and made his prayer to the two winds, Boreas and Zephyrus, north wind and east, and promised them splendid offerings, and much outpouring from a golden goblet entreated them to come, so that the bodies might with best speed burn in the fire, and the timber burst into flame. And Iris, hearing his prayer, went swiftly as messenger to the winds for him. So Iris goes to tell the winds. Now the winds assembled within the house of storm-blowing Zephyrus were taking part in a feast, and Iris paused in her running and stood on the stone doorsill. But they, when their eyes saw her, sprang to their feet, and each one asked her to sit beside him. But she refused to be seated and spoke her word to them. I must not sit down. I am going back to the running waters of Ocean, with the Ethiopians' land, where they are making grand sacrifice to the immortals. There I too shall partake of the sacraments. But Achilles' prayer is that Boreas and blustering Zephyrus may come to him, and he promises them splendid offerings, so that you may set ablaze the funeral pyre wherein lies Patroclus, whom all Achaeans, with all Achaeans, mourning about him. She spoke so, line 212, and went away, and they with immortal clamor rose up and swept the clouds in confusion before them. They came with a sudden blast upon the sea, and the waves rose under the whistling wind. They came to the generous Troad and hit the pyre, and a huge inhuman blaze rose, roaring. Night long they piled the flames on the funeral pyre together, and blew with a screaming blast, and night long swift-footed Achilles, from a golden mixing bowl, with a two-handled goblet in his hand, drew the wine and poured it on the ground, and drenched the ground with it, and called upon the soul of unhappy Patroclus. And as a father mourns as he burns the bones of a son, who is married only now, and died to grieve his unhappy parents, so Achilles was mourning as he burned his companion's bones and dragged himself by the fire in close lamentation. At that time, when the dawn star passes across earth, harbinger of light, and after him dawn of the saffron mantle is scattered across the sea, the fire died down and the flames were over. The winds took their way back toward home again, crossing the Thracian water, and it boiled with a moaning swell as they crossed it. The son of Peleus turned aside and away from the burning and lay down exhausted. So Achilles is exhausted now. And sweet sleep rose upon him. But now they who were with the son of Atreus assembled together, and the sound and murmur of their oncoming wakened Achilles, who straightened himself and sat upright and spoke a word to him. Son of Atreus, and you are the greatest of all the Achaeans, first put out with gleaming wine the pyre that is burning, all that still has on it the fury of fire. Okay, so they're going to put out the fire, not with water, but with wine. And afterwards we shall gather up the bones of Patroclus, the son of Menoetius, which we shall easily tell apart, since they are conspicuous where he lay in the middle of the pyre and the others far from him, at the edge burned, the men indiscriminately with the horses, and let us lay his bones in a golden jar and a double fold of fat, until I myself enfold him in Hades. And I would have you build a grave mound, which is not very great, but such as will be fitting, for now afterwards the Achaeans can make it broad and high. Such of you Achaeans as may be left to survive me here by the benched ships, after I am gone. So he spoke, and they did as swift-footed Pelion told them. First with gleaming wine they put out the pyre that was burning, line 250, as much as was still aflame, and the ashes dropped deep from it. Then they gathered up the white bones of their gentle companion, weeping, and put them into a golden jar with a double fold of fat, and laid it away in his shelter, and covered it with a thin veil, then laid out the tomb, and cast down the holding walls around the funeral pyre, then heaped the loose earth over them, and piled the tomb, and turned to go away. But Achilles held the people there, and made them sit down in a wide assembly, and brought prizes for games out of his ships, cauldrons and tripods, and horses and mules, and the powerful high heads of cattle, and fair-girdled women, and gray iron. First of all, because we're going to have funeral games here, these will be styled exactly like Olympian games, and of course any game or competition that a Greek puts his hand to is designed in some way to strengthen his battle skills to to make him a more perfect human specimen. First of all, line 261, he set forth the glorious prizes for speed of foot, a foot race. For speed of foot for the horseman, a woman faultless in the work of her hands to lead away, and a tripod with ears and holding 22 measures for the first prize. And for the second, he set forth a 6-year-old unbroken mare who carried a mule foal within her, so she's expecting. Then, for the third prize, he set forth a splendid, unfired cauldron, which held 4 measures with its natural gloss still upon it. For the fourth place, he set out 2 talents weight of gold, and for the fifth place, set forth an unfired jar with 2 handles, line 270. He stood upright and spoke his word out among the Argives. Son of Atreus, and all you other strong-greaved Achaeans, these prizes are in the place of games and wait for the horsemen. Now if we Achaeans were contending for the sake of some other hero, I myself should take the first prize away to my shelter. You know how much my horses surpass in their speed all others. Yes, for they are immortal horses, and Poseidon gave them to Peleus my father, who in turn gave them into my hands. But I stay here at the side, and my single-footed horses stay with me. Such is the high glory of the charioteer they have lost, the gentle one, who so many times anointed their manes with soft olive oil after he had washed them in shining water. Therefore these 2 horses stand here and grieve, and their manes are swept along the ground as they stand with hearts full of sorrow. But take the rest of you, line 285, places in the field, whichever Achaean has confidence in his horses and his compacted chariot. All right, so this is a chariot race. So spoke the son of Peleus, and the swift riders gathered. For the first to rise up was the lord of men, Eumelus, the own son of Admetus, who surpassed in horsemanship. After him rose up the son of Tydeus, strong Diomedes, and led under the yoke the Trojan horses, whom he had taken by force from Aeneas. But Aeneas himself was saved by Apollo. After him rose the son of Atreus, fair-haired Menelaus, the sky descended, and led behind the yoke the swift horses Aethe, Agamemnon's mare, and his own Podargus. Echelpolus, son of Anchises, gave her to Agamemnon as a gift, so as not to have to go with him to windy Ilion, but stay where he was and enjoy himself, since Zeus had given him great wealth, and he made his home in the wide spaces of Sicyon. This mare, who was straining hard for the race, Menelaus harnessed. Fourth to order his horses with flowing manes was Antilochus, the glorious son of Nestor, Neleus's son, the high-hearted lord, and fast-running horses out of the breed of Pylas, pulled his chariot, and his father, standing close beside him, gave well-intentioned advice to his own good understanding. Antilochus, you are young indeed, but Zeus and Poseidon have loved you and taught you horsemanship in all of its aspects. Therefore, there's no great need to instruct you. You yourself know how to double the turning post, yet in this race your horse should run slowest. Therefore I think your work will be heavy. The horses of these men are faster, but they themselves do not understand any more than you of the science of racing. Remember then, dear son, to have your mind full of every resource of skill, so that the prizes may not elude you. The woodcutter is far better for skill than he is for brute strength. It is by skill that the sea captain holds his rapid ship on its course, though torn by winds over the wine-blue water. By skill, charioteer outpasses charioteer. He who has put all his confidence in his horses and chariot, and recklessly makes a turn that is loose one way or another, finds his horses drifting out of the course and does not control them. But the man, though he drive the slower horses, who takes his advantage, keeps his eye always on the post and turns tight, ever watchful, pulled with the oxide reins on the course as in the beginning, and holds his horses steady in hand, and watches the leader. I will give you a clear mark, and you cannot fail to notice it. There's a dry stump standing up from the ground about 6 feet, oak it may be, or pine, and not rotted away by rainwater, and 2 white stones are leaned against it, one on either side at the joining place of the waves, and there is smooth driving around it. Either it is the grave mark of someone who died long ago, or was set as a racing goal by men who lived before our time. Now, swift-footed, brilliant Achilles has made it the turning post. You must drive your chariot and horses so as to hug this, and yourself in the strong, fabricated chariot, leaning over, line 335, leaning over a little to the left of the course. And as for your right horse, whip him and urge him along, slackening your hands to give him his full rein. But make your left-hand horse keep hard against the turning post, so that the hub's edge of your fashioned wheel will seem to be touching it. Yet take care not really to brush against it, for if so, you might damage your horses and break your chariot, and that will be a thing of joy for the others, and a failure for you. So, dear son, drive thoughtfully and be watchful, for if you follow the others but get first by the turning point post, there is none who could sprint to make it up, nor close you, nor pass you, not if the man behind you were driving the great Orion, the swift horse of Adrestus, whose birth is from the immortals, or Laomedon's horses, who were the pride of those raised in this country. So spoke Nestor, the son of Neleus, and turned back to his place and sat down, having talked to his son of each stage in a contest. Line 350. Fifth, to order his horses with flowing manes was Meriones. They climbed to the chariots and deposited the lot. Achilles shook them, and the first to fall out was that of Antilochus, Nestor's son, and strong Eumelus drew next after him, and after him the son of Atreus, Menelaus the spear-famed. Meriones drew the next lane to drive, and the last for the driving of horses was drawn by far the best of them all, Diomedes. They stood in line for the start, and Achilles showed them the turnpost far away on the level plain, and beside it he stationed a judge, Phoenix, the godlike, the follower of his father, to mark and remember the running and bring back a true story. Then all held their whips high lifted above their horses, then struck with the whip thongs, and in words urged their horses onward into speed. Rapidly they made their way over the flat land, and presently were far away from the ships. The dust lifting clung beneath the horses' chests like cloud or a storm whirl. Their manes streamed along the blast of the wind. The chariots rocking now would dip to the earth who fosters so many, and now again would spring up clear of the ground, and the drivers stood in the chariots with the spirit beating in each man with the strain to win. And each was calling aloud upon his own horses, and the horses flew through the dust of the flat land. But as the rapid horses were running the last of the race course back and toward the gray sea, then the mettle of each began to show itself, and the field of horses strung out, and before long out in front was the swift-stepping team of the son of Pheres, Eumelus, and after him the stallions of Diomedes, the Trojan horses, not far behind at all, but close on him, for they seemed forever on the point of climbing his chariot, and the wind of them was hot on the back and on the broad shoulders of Eumelus. They lowered their heads and flew close after him, and now he might have passed him, or run into a doubtful decision, had not Phoebus Apollo been angry with Diomedes, Tydeus' son, and dashed the shining whip from his hands, so that the tears began to stream from his eyes, for his anger as he watched how the mares of Eumelus drew far ahead of him, while his own horses ran without the whip and were slowed. Yet Athena did not fail to see the foul play of Apollo on Tydeus' son. She swept in speed to the shepherd of the people and gave him back his whip and inspired strength into his horses. Then in her wrath she went on after the son of Admetus, and she, a goddess, smashed his chariot yoke, and his horses ran on either side of the way. The pole dragged, and Eumelus himself was sent spinning out beside the wheel of the chariot, so that his elbows were all torn in his mouth and his nostrils, and his forehead was lacerated about the brows, and his eyes filled with tears, and the springing voice was held fast within him. Then the son of Tydeus, turning his single-foot horse to pass him, went far out in front of the others, seeing that Athena had inspired strength in his horses, and to himself gave the glory. Line 400. After him came the son of Atreus, fair-haired Menelaus, but Antilochus cried out aloud to his father's horses, "Come on, you two! Pull as fast as you can. I'm not trying to make you match your speed with the speed of those others, the horses of Tydeus' valiant son, Diomedes, to whom now Athena has granted speed and to their rider has given the glory, but make your burst to catch the horses of the son of Atreus, nor let them leave you behind, for fair Aethe, who is female, may shower you in mockery. Are you falling back, my brave horses? For I will tell you this, and it will be a thing accomplished. There will be no more care for you from the shepherd of the people, Nestor, but he will slaughter you out of hand with the edge of bronze if we win the meaner prize, because you are unwilling. Keep on close after him and make all the speed you are able. I myself shall know what to do and contrive it, so that we get in the narrow place of the way. He will not escape me." So he spoke, and they, fearing the angry voice of their master, ran harder for a little while. And presently after this, battle-stubborn Antilochus saw where the hollow way narrowed. There was a break in the ground where winter water had gathered and broken out of the road and made a sunken place all about. Menelaus, shrinking from a collision of chariots, steered there, but Antilochus also turned out his single-footed horses from the road and bore a little way aside and went after him. And the son of Atreus was frightened and called out aloud to Antilochus, line 425, "Antilochus, this is reckless horsemanship. Hold on your horses. The way is narrow here. It will soon be wider for passing. Be careful not to crash your chariot and wreck both of us." So he spoke, but Antilochus drove on all the harder for a whiplash for greater speed, as if he had never heard him. As far as the range of a discussion swung from the shoulder and thrown, as far as the range of a discus swung from the shoulder and thrown by a stripling who tries out the strength of his young manhood, so far they ran even, but then the mares of Atreides gave way and fell back, for he of his own will slackened the driving, for fear that in the road the single-footed horses might crash and overturn the strong fabricated chariot, and the men themselves go down in the dust, through their hard striving for victory. But Menelaus of the fair hair called to him in anger, "Antilochus, there is no other man more cursed than you are." "Oh, diss you. We Achaeans lied when we said you had good sense, even though you will not get this prize without having to take oath." He spoke, line 442, and lifted his voice and called aloud to his horses, "Never hold back now, never stop, for all your hearts are sorrowful. The feet of these and their knees will weary before yours do, seeing that the youth is gone from those horses." So he spoke, and they, fearing the angry voice of their master, ran the harder, and soon were close up behind the others. Now the Argives, who sat in their assembly, were watching the horses, and the horses flew through the dust of the flat land. Idomeneus, lord of the Cretans, was first to make out the horses, for he sat apart from the others assembled, and higher up, where he could see all ways. And from far off he heard Diomedes calling, and knew him, and made out one horse ahead of the others, who was conspicuous, all red, except on his forehead there was a white mark, round like the full moon. Idomeneus rose to his feet upright, and spoke his word out to the Argives. "Friends, who are leaders of the Argives and keep their counsel, am I the only one who can see the horses, or can you also? It seems to me there are other horses leading, and I can make out another charioteer. The mares of Eumelus must have come to grief somewhere in the plain who led on the way out, for those I saw running out in front as they made the turnpost, I can see no longer anywhere, though I watch and though my eyes look everywhere about the plain of Troy. But it must be that the reins got away from the charioteer, or he could not hold them well in hand at the goal, and failed to double the turnpost. There I think he must have been thrown out and his chariot broken, and the mares bolted away with the wildness upon their spirit. But you also stand up and look for yourselves. I cannot well make out. But it seems to me the man who is leading is an Aetolian by birth, but lord of the Argives, the son of Tydeus, breaker of forces, strong Diomedes." Swift Aias, son of Oileus, spoke shamefully to him in anger, "Idomeneus, what was all this windy talk? The light-footed horses are still far where they sweep over the great plain. You are not so much the youngest among the Argives, nor do the eyes in your head see so much sharper than others, but forever you are windy with your words, and you should not be a windy speaker. There are others here better than you are. The horses who are in front are the same as before, and they are those of Eumelus, and he stands holding the reins behind them." The lord of the Cretans answered him to his face in anger, "Aias, surpassing in abuse yet stupid, in all else you are the worst of the Argives with that stubborn mind of yours. Come then, let us put up a wager of a tripod or cauldron and make Agamemnon, son of Atreus, witness between us as to which horses lead, and when you pay you will find out." So they're betting whose horses are in front. So he spoke, and swift Aias, son of Oileus, was rising up angry in turn to trade hard words with him. And now the quarrel between the two of them would have gone still farther had not Achilles himself risen up and spoken between them. And no longer now, Aias and Idomeneus continue to exchange this bitter and evil talk. Okay, they have to quit all this. It is not becoming. If another acted so, you yourselves would be angry. Rather, sit down again among those assembled and watch for the horses, and they in their strain for victory will before long be here. Then you each can see for himself and learn which of the Argive horses have run first and which have run second." He spoke, and now Tydeus' son, in his rapid course, was close on them, and he lashed them always with the whip stroke from the shoulder. His horses still lifted their feet light and high as they made their swift passage. Dust flying splashed always the charioteer, and the chariot that was overlaid in gold and tin still rolled hard after the flying feet of the horses, and in their wake there was not much trace from the running rims of the wheels left in the thin dust. The horses came in running hard. Diomedes stopped them in the middle of where the men were assembled, and with the dense sweat starting. Line 5-8. And dripping to the ground from neck and chest of his horses, he himself vaulted down to the ground from his shining chariot and leaned his whip against the yoke. Nor did strong Sthenelus delay, but made haste to take up the prizes, and gave the woman to his high-hearted companions to lead away, and the tripod with ears to carry, while Diomedes set free the horses. After him, Neleon Antilochus drove in his horses, having passed Menelaus not by speed but by taking advantage. But even so, Menelaus held his fast horses close on him. As far as from the wheel stands the horse who is straining to pull his master with the chariot over the flat land, the extreme hairs in the tail of the horse brush against the running rim of the wheel, and he courses very close, and there is not much space between as he runs a great way over the flat land. By so much, Menelaus was left behind Antilochus the blameless. At first he was left behind the length of a discus thrown, but he was overhauling him fast, with Aethe of the fair mane, Agamemnon's mare, putting on a strong burst. If both of them had to run the course any further, Menelaus would have passed him, and there could have been no argument. But Meriones, strong henchman of Idomeneus, was left a spear cast's length behind by glorious Menelaus. Line 530. For his special horses with splendid mares were slowest of all, and likewise he himself was of least account for the racing of chariots. Last and behind them all came in the son of Admetus, dragging his fine chariot and driving his horses before him. And seeing this, brilliant, swift-footed Achilles took pity upon them and stood forth among the Argives and spoke to them all in winged words. "The best man is driving his single-foot horses in last. Come, then, we must give some kind of prize, and well he deserves it. Second prize, let first place go to the son of Tydeus." So he spoke, and all gave approval to what he was urging. And he would have given him the horse, since all the Achaeans approved, had not Antilochus, son of great-hearted Nestor, stood up to answer Peleid Achilles and argue, "Achilles, I shall be very angry with you if you accomplish what you have said. You mean to take my prize away from me, with the thought in mind that his chariot fouled and his running horses, but he himself is great. He should have prayed to the immortal gods. That is why he came in last of all in running. But if you are sorry for him, and he is dear to your liking, there is abundant gold in your shelter, and there is bronze there, and animals, and there are handmaidens and single-foot horses. You can take from these, and give him afterwards a prize still greater than mine, or now at once, and have the Achaeans applaud you. But the mare I will not give up, and the woman who wants her must fight me for her with his hands before he can take her." So he spoke, line 555. But brilliant, swift-footed Achilles, favoring Antilochus, smiled, since he was his beloved companion, and answered him and addressed him in winged words. "Antilochus, if you would have me bring some other thing out of my dwelling as special gift for Eumelus, then for your sake I will do it. I will give him that corslet I stripped from Astropius. It is bronze, but there is an overlay circled about it in shining tin. It will be a gift that will mean much to him." He spoke and told Automedon, his beloved companion, to bring it out of the shelter. And he went away and brought it back and put it in Eumelius's hands, and he accepted it joyfully. But now Menelaus, heart full of bitterness, stood up among them in relentless anger against Antilochus, and the Herod put the staff into his hand and gave the call for the Argives to be silent. And he stood forth, a man like a god, and spoke to them, "Antilochus, you had good sense once. See what you have done. You have defiled my horsemanship. You have fouled my horses by throwing your horses in their way, though yours were far slower. Come then, O leaders of the Argives and their men of council, judge between the two of us now and without favor, so that no man of the bronze-armored Achaeans shall say of us, Menelaus, using lies and force against Antilochus, went off with the mare he won, for his horses were far slower, but he himself was greater in power and degree. Or rather, come, I myself will give the judgment, and I think no other man of the Danaans can call it in question, for it will be right. Antilochus, beloved of Zeus, come here. This is justice. Stand in front of your horses and chariot, and in your hand take up the narrow whip with which you drove them before. Then lay your hand on the horses and swear by him who encircles the earth and shakes it you used no guile to baffle my chariot. For they have to promise they did not cheat. Line 586. Then in turn Antilochus of the good council answered him, Enough now, for I, my lord Menelaus, am younger by far than you, and you are the greater and go before me. You know how greedy transgressions flower in a young man, seeing that his mind is the more active, but his judgment is lightweight. Therefore, I would have your heart be patient with me. I myself will give you out of my house. I myself will give you the mare I won, and if there were something still greater you asked for out of my house, I should still be willing at once to give it to you, beloved of Zeus, rather than all my days fall from your favor and be in the wrong before the divinities. He spoke, the son of Nestor the great-hearted, and leading the mare up, gave her to Menelaus's hand. But his anger was softened, as with dew the ears of corn are softened in the standing corn growth of a shuddering field. For you also, the heart of Menelaus, was thus softened within you. He spoke to him aloud and addressed him in winged words. Antilochus, I myself who was angry, now will give way before you, since you were not formerly loose-minded or vain. It is only that this time your youth got the better of your intelligence. Beware another time of playing tricks on your betters. Any other man of the Achaeans might not have appeased me, but you have suffered much from me and done much hard work, and your noble father too, and your brother for my sake. Therefore I will be ruled by your supplication. I will even give you the mare, though she is mine, so that these men too may be witnesses that the heart is never arrogant or stubborn within me. He spoke, and gave Antilochus's companion, Naoman, to lead the mare away, and himself took the glittering cauldron. Fourth, in the order he had driven, Meriones took up the 2 talents' weight of gold, but the fifth prize, the two-handled jar, was left. Achilles carried it through the assembly of the Argives, and gave it to Nestor, and stood by and spoke to him, This, aged sir, is yours to lay away as a treasure, in memory of the burial of Patroclus, since never again will you see him among the Argives. I give you this prize for the giving, since never again will you fight with your fists, nor wrestle, nor enter again the field for the spear-throwing, nor race on your feet, since now the hardship of old age is upon you. He spoke, and put it in the hands of Nestor, who took it joyfully and went in answer, and addressed him in winged words. Line 625. So Achilles gives Nestor a prize because Nestor is too old to win any physical games. And Nestor replies, Yes, child, all this you said to me was true as you said it. My limbs are no longer steady, dear friend, not my feet, neither do my arms, as they once did, swing light from my shoulders. I wish I were young again and the strength still unshaken within me. As once, when great Amarynceus was buried in the Epeans at Buprasium, and his sons gave names for a king's funeral. Then there was no man like me, not among the Apians, nor yet of the Pylians themselves, or of great-hearted Aetolians. As boxing, I won against Clytomedes, the son of Enox, at wrestling against Angiches of Pleuron, who stood up against me. In the foot race, for all his speed, I outran Iphiclus, and with the spear I outthrew Polydorus, and Phileus. It was only in the chariot race that the sons of Actor defeated me, crossing me in the crowd, so intent on winning were they, for the biggest prizes had been left for the horse race. Line 640. Now these sons of Actor were twins. One held the reins at his leisure, while the other lashed on the horses. This was I once. Now it is for the young men to encounter in such actions, and for me to give way to the persuasion of gloomy old age. But once I shone among the young heroes, go now and honor the death of your companion with contests. I accept this from you gratefully, and my heart is happy that you have remembered me and my kindness, that I am not forgotten for the honor that should be my honor among the Achaeans. May the gods, for what you have done for me, give you great happiness. Line 650. He spoke, and Peleides went back among the great numbers of Achaeans assembled, when he had listened to all the praise spoken by Neleus his son, and set forth the prizes for the painful boxing. He led out into the field and tethered there a hard-working 6-year-old unbroken jenny, of the kind that is hardest to break, and for the loser set out a 2-handled goblet. He stood upright and spoke his word out among the Argives. Son of Atreus, and all you other strong-greaved Achaeans, we invite 2 men, the best among you, to contend for these prizes with their hands up for the blows of boxing. He whom Apollo grants to outlast the other, and all the Achaeans witness it, let him lead away the hard-working jenny to his own shelter. The beaten man shall take away the 2-handled goblet. He spoke, and a man huge and powerful, well-skilled in boxing, line 665, rose up among them, the son of Panopeus, Epeus. He laid his hand on the hard-working jenny and spoke out, Let the man come up who will carry off the 2-handled goblet. I say no other of the Achaeans will beat me at boxing and lead off the jenny. I claim I am the champion. Is it not enough that I fall short in battle, since it could not be ever that a man could be a master in every endeavor? Okay, you can't be good at everything. I'm not good in battle, but nobody will beat me in boxing. And this is line 672. For I tell you this straight out, and it will be a thing accomplished. I will smash his skin apart and break his bones on each other. Let those who care for him wait nearby in a huddle about him to carry him out, after my fists have beaten him under. So he spoke, and all of them stayed stricken to silence. Alone, Eurylochus stood up to face him, a godlike man, son of Lord Nicistius of the seed of Telaus, of him who came once to Thebes and the tomb of Oedipus. This is Oedipus at Thebes. To the tomb of Oedipus after his downfall, and there in boxing defeated all the Cadmeans. The spear-famed son of Tydeus was his second, and talked to him in encouragement, and much desired the victory for him. First he pulled on the boxing belt about his waist, and then gave him the thongs carefully cut from the hide of a ranging ox. The 2 men, girt up, strode into the midst of the circle and faced each other, and put up their ponderous hands at the same time, and closed, so that their heavy arms were crossing each other, and there was a fierce grinding of teeth. The sweat began to run everywhere from their bodies. Great Epeus came in and hit him as he peered out from his guard on the cheek, and he could no longer keep his feet, but where he stood the glorious limbs gave. And what was it like when he got hit? As in the water roughened by the north wind, a fish jumps in the weeds of the beach break, and then the dark water closes above him. So Eurylochus left the ground from the blow, but great-hearted Epeus took him in his arms and set him upright, and his true companions stood about him and led him out of the circle, feet dragging as he spat up the thick blood and rolled his head over on one side. He was dizzy when they brought him back and set him among them, but they themselves went and carried off the 2-handled goblet. Line 700. So that boxing match only landed for one blow. Line 700. Now Peleides, Achilles, set forth the prizes for the 3rd contest. And what's the 3rd contest going to be? The 2nd one was boxing. The 1st was a chariot race. The painful wrestling at once, and displayed them before the Danaans. There was a great tripod to set over fire for the winner. The Achaeans among themselves valued it at the worth of 12 oxen. But for the beaten man, he set in their midst a woman skilled in much work of her hands, and they rated her at 4 oxen. Line 705. How do you like that, ladies? They set her in the midst of them, and then they rate her. How many oxen is she worth? Let's see, this tripod's worth 12. She's worth 4. Give her to the loser. Line 706. He stood upright and spoke his word out among the Argives. Rise up, 2 who would endeavor this prize. So he spoke, and presently there rose up huge Telamonian Aias, and resourceful Odysseus rose, who was versed in every advantage. The 2 men, girt up, strode out into the midst of the circle and grappled each other in the hook of their heavy arms, as when rafters lock, when a renowned architect has fitted them in the roof of a high house to keep out the force of a wind's spite. Their backs creaked under stress of violent hands that tugged them stubbornly, and the running sweat broke out, and raw places frequent all along their ribs and their shoulders broke out, bright red with blood, as both of them kept up their hard efforts for success and the prize of the rocked tripod. Neither Odysseus was able to bring Aias down or throw him to the ground, nor could Aias, but the great strength of Odysseus held out against him. Line 720. But now, as they made the strong-greaved Achaeans begin to be restless, at last great Telamonian Aias said to the other, "Son of Laertes and seed of Zeus, resourceful Odysseus, lift me, or I will lift you. All success shall be as Zeus gives it." He spoke and heaved, but not forgetting his craft, Odysseus, line 725, caught him with a stroke behind the hollow of the knee and unnerved the tendons and threw him over backwards so that Odysseus fell on his chest, and the people gazed upon them and wondered. Next, brilliant, much-enduring Odysseus endeavored to lift him and budged him a little from the ground, but still could not raise him clear, then hooked a knee behind so that both of them went down together to the ground and lay close and were soiled in the dust. Then they would have sprung to their feet once more and wrestled a third fall, had not Achilles himself stood up and spoken to stop them. "Ha! Wrestle no more now. Do not wear yourselves out and get hurt. You have both won. Therefore, take the prizes in equal division and retire, so the rest of the Achaeans can have their contests." So he spoke, and they listened close to him and obeyed him and wiped the dust away from their bodies and put on their tunics. I always have wondered here, line 735 and 736. I can imagine, I suppose, dividing the cauldron, the tripod, but I cannot imagine dividing the woman. Line 740. At once the son of Peleus set out prizes for the foot race. All right, now we are going to have the foot race. A mixing bowl of silver, a work of art, which held only 6 measures, but for its loveliness it surpassed all others on earth by far, since skilled Sidonian craftsmen had wrought it well, and Phoenicians carried it over the misty face of the water and set it in the harbor and gave it for a present to Thoas. Eunias, son of Jason, gave it to the hero Patroclus to buy Lycaon, Priam's son, out of slavery, and now Achilles made it a prize in memory of his companion for that man who should prove in the speed of his feet to run lightest. For second place, he set out a great ox with fat deep upon him, and for the last runner, 1/2 talent's weight of gold. He stood upright then and spoke his word out among the Argives, "Rise up, you who would endeavor this prize." So he spoke, and presently there rose up swift Aias, the son of Oileus. And this is not Telamonian Aias, who just wrestled with Odysseus. This is swift Aias. Now he has opportunity to be swift. And Odysseus, line 755, the resourceful, rose up, and after him, Nestor's son Antilochus, the best runner among all the young men. They stood in line for the start. And they only have 3 prizes, right? 3 men. And Achilles showed them the turnpost. The field was strung out from the scratch, and not long afterwards, Oileus's son was out in front. But brilliant Odysseus overhauled him close, as near as to the breast of a woman fair girdled is the rod she pulls in her hands carefully as she draws the spool out and along the warp and holds it close to her chest. So Odysseus ran close up. He was just as close as that, but behind him, and his feet were hitting the other's tracks before the dust settled. Line 765. Great Odysseus was breathing on the back of the head of Aias as he ran and held his speed, and all the Achaeans were shouting for his effort to win and hallooed him hard along in his running. But as they were running the last part of the race, then Odysseus said a prayer inside his own mind to gray-eyed Athena. Line 770, "Hear me, goddess, be kind, and come with strength for my footsteps." So he spoke in prayer, and Pallas Athena heard him. She made his limbs light, both his feet and the hands above them. Now as they were making their final sprint for the trophy, there Aias slipped in his running, for Athena unbalanced him, where dung was scattered on the ground from the bellowing oxen slaughtered by swift-footed Achilles. So you realize here in line 775 that poor Aias slipped in the cow poo of the oxen slaughtered by swift Achilles, those he slew to honor Patroclus. And his mouth and nose were filled with the cow dung, so that Odysseus, the great and much enduring, took off the mixing bowl, seeing he had passed him and come in first, and the ox went to glorious Aias. He stood there holding in his hands the horn of the field ox, spitting the dung from his mouth, and spoke his words to the Argives, to the Greeks. Ah, now, that goddess made me slip on my feet, who has always stood over Odysseus like a mother and taken good care of him. He spoke, and all the rest of them laughed happily at him. In turn, Antilochus took up prize for last place, and carried it off, and grinning spoke his word out among the Argives. Friends, you all know well what I tell you, that still the immortals continue to favor the elder men. For see now, Aias is elder than I, if only by a little, but this man is out of another age than ours, and one of the ancients. And you have to realize Nestor's son, Antilochus, just called Odysseus one of the ancients in 790. But his, they say, is a green old age. It would be a hard thing for any Achaean to match his speed, except for Achilles. So he spoke and glorified the swift-footed Pelian. So Achilles got glory from this when he is acknowledged by Nestor's son as the fastest runner, even faster than Odysseus. So he spoke and glorified the swift-footed Pelian, and Achilles gave him an answer for what he said and spoke to him. Line 795, Antilochus, your good word for me shall not have been spoken in vain. I shall give you another half talent of gold in addition. And so Antilochus, Nestor's son, just won the third prize. I suppose we call that the bronze prize. He got it, and Achilles is going to give him another half talent of gold for the compliment. He spoke and put it in Antilochus's hands, who received it joyfully. Then the son of Peleus, Achilles, carried into the circle and set down a far-shadowing spear, and set down beside it a shield and a helmet, the armor of Sarpedon that Patroclus stripped from his body. Line 800. He stood upright and spoke his word out among the Argives. We invite two men, the best among you, to contend for these prizes. Let them draw their armor upon them and take up the rending bronze spears, and stand up to each other in the trial of close combat. The fighter, who is first of the two to get in a stroke at the other's fair body, to get through armor and dark blood and reach to the vitals, to that man I will give this magnificent silver-nailed sword of Thrace I stripped from the body of Asteropaeus. And so this is a studded sword. But let both men carry off this armor and have it in common, and we shall set out a brave dinner before them both in our shelters. So he spoke, and there rose up huge Telamonian Aias, and next the son of Tydeus, this is Diomedes, rose up, strong Diomedes. When these were in their armor on either side of the assembly, they came close together in the middle space, furious for the combat. Line 815, with dangerous looks, and wonder settled on all the Achaeans. Then, as, moving forward, the two were closing in on each other, there were three charges. Three times they swept in close. Then Aias stabbed at Diomedes' shield on its perfect circle, but did not get through to the skin, for the corslet inside it guarded him. Line 820. The son of Tydeus, Diomedes, over the top of the huge shield, was always menacing the neck of Aias with the point of the shining spear. But when the Achaeans saw it in fear for Aias, they called for them to stop and divide the prizes evenly. But the hero Achilles carried the great sword with its scabbard and carefully cut sword belt and gave it to Diomedes. So the Greeks were afraid that one of these great men, Aias or Telamonian Aias or Diomedes, would be killed, and so they stopped it and said, you both won. Line 825. Now the son of Peleus, Achilles, set in place a lump of pig iron, which had once been the throwing weight of Eetion in his great strength. So a lump of pig iron, this is similar to a shot put. This event is going to be throwing a weight. But now swift-footed, brilliant Achilles had slain him and taken the weight away in the ships along with the other possessions. Line 830. He stood upright and spoke his word out among the Argives. Rise up, you who would endeavor to win this prize also, For although the rich dimensities of him who wins it lie far off indeed, yet for the succession of 5 years he will have it to use. For his shepherd, for want of iron, will not have to go into the city for it, nor his plowman either. This will supply them. And so this prize, they get a lump of iron, and they get the use of it for 5 years. So he spoke, and up stood Polypoetes, the stubborn in battle, and Leontius in his great strength, a godlike man. And there rose Abias, the son of Telamon, and brilliant Epius. They stood in order to throw, and great Epius took up the weight and whirled and threw it. And all the Achaeans laughed when they saw him. Second to throw in turn was Leontius, Scion of Ares, and third in turn, huge Telamonian Aias threw it from his ponderous hand and overpassed the marks of all others. But when Polypoetes, stubborn in battle, caught up the iron, he overthrew the entire field by as far as an ox herd can cast with his throwing stick, which spins through the air and comes down where the cattle graze in their herds. And all the Achaeans applauded, and the companions of powerful Polypoetes, uprising, carried the prize of the king away to the hollow vessels. Line 8:50. But Achilles set gloomy iron forth once more. For the archers, he set 10 double-bladed axes forth, 10 with single blades, and planted far away on the sands the mast pole of a dark prowed ship, and tethered a tremulous wild pigeon to it by a thin string attached to her foot, then challenged the archers to shoot at her. Now let the man who hits the wild pigeon take up and carry away home with him all the full axes, but if one should miss the bird and still hit the string, that man, seeing that he is the loser, still shall have the half axes. So he spoke, and there rose up in his strength the Lord Teucrus, and Meriones rose up, Idomeneus's powerful henchman. Line 8:60. They chose their lots and took them up in a brazen helmet, and Teucrus was allotted first place to shoot. He let fly a strong shot arrow, but did not promise the Lord of Archery that he would accomplish for him a grand sacrifice of lambs firstborn. And of course, who's the Lord of Archery? Apollo. So this man, Teucrus, is shooting first, but forgot to ask Apollo for a little bit of help. He missed the bird, for Apollo begrudged him that, but he did hit the string beside the foot where the bird was tied, and the tearing arrow went straight through and cut the string, and the pigeon soared swift up toward the sky, while the string dropped and dangled toward the ground. But still the Achaeans thundered approval. Meriones, in a fury of haste, caught the bow from his hand, but had out an arrow before while Teucrus was aiming, and forthwith promised to the one who strikes from afar, Apollo, that he would accomplish for him a grand sacrifice of lambs firstborn. Way up under the clouds he saw the tremulous wild dove, and as she circled, struck her head under the wing in the body, and the shaft passed clean through and out of her, so that it dropped back and stuck in the ground beside the foot of Meriones. But the bird dropped and fell on top of the mast of the dark proud vessel, and drooped her neck, and the beating wings went slack, and the spirit of life fled swift away from her limbs. Far down from the mast peak she dropped to earth, line 8:80. And people gazed upon it and wondered. Then Meriones gathered up all 10 double axes, but Teucrus carried the half axes back to the hollow ships. Then the son of Peleus, Achilles, carried into the circle and set down a far-shadowing spear and an unfired cauldron with patterns of flowers on it, the worth of an ox, and the spear-throwers rose up. So this next event is spear-throwing. The son of Atreus rose up, wide, powerful Agamemnon, and Meriones rose up, Idomeneus's powerful henchman. But now among them spoke swift-footed, brilliant Achilles. Line 8:90. Son of Atreus, for we know how much you surpass all others, by how much you are the greatest for strength among the spear-throwers. Therefore take this prize and keep it and go back to your hollow ships. But let us give the spear to the hero Meriones, if your own heart would have it this way, for so I invite you. He spoke, nor did Agamemnon, lord of men, disobey him. The hero gave the bronze spear to Meriones, and thereafter handed his prize, surpassingly lovely, to the herald Talthybius. And there ends Book 23.